something on this one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Madam Chair, I'm sorry. Madam Chair and members. Senate file 1932 has to do with county accountability measurements. It has to do with deed. And basically, it tries to get at the point, if we're doing something in deed related to economic development or workforce, we ought to be able to measure whether, in fact, we're effective. Whether or not we've had successes. And so that is the essence of this bill, to put into place a process by which we can measure effectiveness on deed workforce development and economic development programs. Madam Chair, I do have an amendment, an A1 amendment.
Thank you very much, and we'll pass that out.
So move that amendment.
And that will be moved by Senator Day, moves the A1. And this is your first stop, Senator Sundjom, so this is an author's amendment?
Madam Chair, yes, it is the first stop.
I believe it is. So Senator Day moves the A1 amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign, and the motion prevails.
Madam Chair, I also have an oral amendment, which I've written down, if that would be helpful. Actually, a couple of oral amendments. And maybe I've got them in writing, but after, on line 115, after chairs, this is standard language with the council and the Energy Committee, but if we could add and ranking minority members.
Okay, and Senator Day moves an oral amendment that on line 1.15, I believe, after submitted to the chairs, add the language and ranking minority members.
Thank you.
Discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Same sign, and the motion prevails.
And Madam Chair, I probably should have done this in block, but if we could move to 119, after the second the, if we could insert chairs and the ranking minority member of the.
All right. On line 1.19, after must report to the, add the words chairs and ranking minority members.
Of the.
Of the.
Committee.
And then. And then continue committees of the House of Representatives and Senate.
All ready to go.
Okay. And Senator Day moves that amendment. And discussion, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign, and the motion prevails. We have a bill in front of us now, Senator.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
That's what I heard.
I think what I'll do is I'll turn to my colleague here, Mark Loftus of Deed, if he could summarize the bill for us.
Madam Chair,
thank you, Mr. Loftus, for being here.
And members, my name is Mark Loftus. I'm with Deed. This bill grew out of conversations that was held in the House Economic Development Finance Committee. But I think it would be fair to say that a lot of you probably share some of the same concerns about the ability to document the outcomes of programs and specifically to be able to compare results. They have return on investment measures where you could compare this program against a program in another part of our department. Currently, as you know, and looking at the biennial budget documents, we provide outcome measures. We provide results for every program. But I think I would be the first to admit on behalf of the department that it would be very difficult for you to use that data to make budget decisions in ways that you would find meaningful and frankly, that our department should be using as well to make judgments about what recommendations for cuts or additional funds that we have. So this bill represents an agreement on our part as well that we want to work with the respective committees to make that happen, the comparability of return on investment across the department so that you have a better handle going forward. And the other part of the amendments that were offered that you approved also describe the necessity of us to work with the grant recipients, the pass-through grants to the organizations, to work with them, to notify them of the requirements, This will not be a one-sided process where we tell them, here are the requirements, and you do it just the way we tell you. We want to have that be a mutual development of outcomes. As you know, within our department, Madam Chair, there are a wide variety of programs.
Mm-hmm.
And it is tough to compare these things, but to the extent that we can do that with our return on investment measures, we want to do that. So that's what's represented in the bill.
Very good. And Senator Skoy, question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Senjum, I think this is a good idea that's going on here. And I just would like to ask Mr. Loftus, on the return on investment that you're going to be reporting back, I think the investment part will be pretty easy to analyze. You know, you'll know how much state resources went into it. But return is going to be a little trickier item to analyze. You know, are you going to, analyze number of jobs or livable wage jobs or tax revenue or, you know, that's going to be the hard part. And if you could just talk a little bit about where you think that might go, if you know at this point, or otherwise maybe Senator Senjum, when this putting this stuff together, we'll want to have a little discussion about that.
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, I agree that there will be difficulty in that. And I'll give you an example of where I think that can go. When we have our department's services for small business assistance, we have the small business development centers that we administer grants for. We also have about four other organizations who are pass-through recipients of funds, groups like Women Venture and MEDA and Riverbend Enterprise Facilitation Program, and Minnesota Veterans Congress, too, by the way. Those are all organizations that have an impact in working with a business. But in different ways, even with that small sector of our department, we've not measured things consistently. In one case, we might measure number of businesses counseled with assistance. In another program, we might measure job creation with that or tax base generation in part of that. So even within one area that's comparable, you would think is readily comparable, we have not developed those kinds of measures. So in one case, it might be tax base enhancement. In another case, it might be job creation. In another case, with all of the programs that relate to individuals in our department, it might be other measures of individual growth that occur or the impact on individuals. So it is a fair question that it will be a challenge for us, but I think we owe it to you and to our department's performance to make that effort. So.
Senator Scott, can I just offer also, if you look on, and maybe you have, on lines 122-3-4, talks about target populations, number of jobs, new jobs, salary, persons off the workers' compensation programs on the next page, and off the Minnesota Family Investment Program, and so on. So that will be the kind of information that the committee will get back under this program.
No, very good, Senator Zinjam. I just wanted to make that as a kind of a
good comment.
Yeah. Thank you.
Right. So to follow up, I guess, Mr. Fuller, if you could perhaps we have a question on appropriations versus grants, and specifically also some questions about how might this in fact impact those programs that are considered sheltered workshops or services to disabled groups and social services, where maybe the intent is a little different, and how will this impact them, and is the reporting perhaps a burden to some groups? I know in some of our committees we are looking at, as we are perhaps reducing funding, especially within schools, we've looked at, are we requiring additional reports when we perhaps are, you know, providing less in terms of resources. So, but also wanting good data to make decisions in the future. So, Mr. Fuller, maybe you could ask some questions that might address that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Loftus, I just point you to page 2, line 9. And I think the concern is that with that if you don't file the report or a satisfactory report, you're not going to receive additional state funding. And so the concern is that's related to grants, though, on line 10. Are there vulnerable populations who participate in programs, say, that receive grants, so that, in a sense, we'd be putting them at risk if the administrator of the program doesn't file a report? Or are all these grants Are they the sort that go to an individual business and they should step up the plate? So that's sort of the overarching question. Is it a little too draconian if we're talking about people who are in a program that gets a grant and may be adversely affected because the administrator didn't file a report?
Madam Chair, members, Mr. Fuller, we recognize that we don't want to add a burden to those groups that are in a fragile position financially now with administrative staff and so forth. I have to say, I have a list of about a page and a half of all the programs that we fund or pass money through to, and I honestly can't tell you that in every program that this is the case, but I do know that every group, I am almost certain that every group provides information to us on some periodic basis as far as their performance in return for receiving the funds. And we will, all I can do is assure you that we will make sure that there is no draconian effect on the individuals receiving services if an administrator is failing to provide the information. That's part of our bureaucracy trying to work effectively with the grantees who are sometimes very small organizations.
Yes.
Madam Chair, Mr. Loftus, it doesn't seem like there's the flexibility to do that in this language, because it says if you don't file the report, you can't get any more money. And so, you know, if you're part of a subgroup who's in a program, that doesn't seem appropriate. If it, you know, seems more appropriate if you're a business that's come in for a grant and entered into an agreement to do certain things and you don't file the report. I mean, this is, so do you think you would need some flexibility that withholding of funding wouldn't apply to programs that receive grants and serve a population of people who have nothing to do with the report filing?
That would be helpful, I think, Mr. Fuller. I just have something to note that so that a group doesn't come back and there's been an issue when that was not our intent. Is there any language you might suggest, Mr. Loftus?
On the spot here, Madam Chair, I can't think of language, but I, the intent of that is certainly something we would agree with. And
Madam Chair, Mr. Fuller?
So perhaps perhaps to take out Subdivision 3, would that be a possibility? Or just that clause before receiving additional state funds on line 2.9? And then maybe work on better language. Senator Day.
Madam Chair, I would move that Mr. Fuller get some language that makes these two gentlemen seem happy and all of us seem happy.
Mm-hmm.
If he could do that.
Okay. Could work on that. And is this going to be?
Madam Chair, could I just ask, I haven't talked to my house officer, but if on 210, if you made must, should, and also on 212, if you made must, should, does that provide a little less rigid language?
Well, in talking to like you, Mr. Fuller, I think we'd like to work on it a little bit more. And do you know if this is going to the floor, Senator Sundjum, or if this is going somewhere else after this?
Madam Chair, I do not know beyond this committee where this will go.
Nobody else has asked for it. So we'd like to, I think, have it leave this committee feeling like we've got the language that addresses what you intend to do and some of our concerns.
Madam Chair, we could do a floor amendment, too.
Okay. We'll work on the floor amendment. So, Mr. Fuller, do you have a suggestion?
Well, Madam Chair, if it is a one-time grant and they didn't file a report, wouldn't the department have discretion not to make another grant to those people or as part of your? So I'm not sure there's a problem then if we're only talking about those sorts of grants where people are coming in a competitive sense, and it might not need that first seven words.
So would it be possible, Senator Sundjum, would you consider, it sounds like maybe striking before receiving additional state funds?
Recipient must provide.
On line 2.9?
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And that would possibly work. That would be a good starting point.
Thanks,
and then
so,
maybe
Madam
if
Chair.
There's additional work that we need to do, we can, you know, do that before it reaches the floor. So are there any other questions? And would someone like to move that amendment?
So moved.
That is moved by Senator Day. Moves on line 2.9 to strike before receiving additional state funds, comma. Any more discussion on that? And on the amendment, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. And the motion prevails. All right, Senator Senjum, I think we are ready to talk a little more. Are there any other questions about the bill? Senator Day would like to move 1932 as amended, and we referred to the floor as our understanding. So any more discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign, and the motion prevails. Thank you very much, Senator Senjum, for working
Chair
with
members,
us.
Thank you very much.
And next is Senator Rummel with Senate File 247. Excuse me, we're going to take Senator Anderson's bill. I apologize. Senate File 1919. And I apologize, Senator Rummel. We'll be right back. So, and welcome, Senator Anderson. We've
Thank
been getting a number of emails about your bill today. At least I have. So I'm delighted to hear about good things.
Good.
People
I'm
are
glad
are
to
very
know that.
Supportive of it. So. I just want to tell you that I've heard about your bill. So
that's great. I appreciate that, Madam Chair. And I want to thank Senator Rummel. I have a sick child at home, and so I really want to go home after this. So thank you for letting me take my bill up first. I really appreciate it. And Nikki, thank you. I have a handout that I'd like to pass out on this bill. And I don't have any witnesses with me today. This I'm glad to hear you received some emails in support, so that's fantastic. This is a recommendation that comes out of the Green Jobs Task Force, and this was one of our important items of discussion. I should say that Mr. Fuller has come up with an amendment that I would like to put on the bill before I describe what it does, because it will significantly change its approach, and I think it's a good suggestion at this point in the legislative session to kind of streamline and reduce the ambition of what we're trying to do at this point in time and start kind of at a smaller scale. So I would like members to look at the A1 amendment, and I'd like the committee to put that on as an author's amendment. Then I can explain the differences.
So we have the A1 amendment, and Senator Carlson, would you move the A1 amendment? So moved. And on the A1 amendment, all those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign, and the motion prevails. And that is being passed out. Thank you very much, Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The Green Enterprise Authority is a concept that we've talked about a lot, as I said, in the Green Jobs Task Force. And the concept of this idea is to create a collaborative entity in state government that will provide a number of advantages over the existing structure. And it would be an entity that would really focus on how to maximize our strategic advantages in Minnesota in relationship to the green economy and maximizing the job growth and economic development that comes from the green economy and those opportunities that come from that. The original bill was set up in a way that would have taken employees from a number of different state agencies and put them into this kind of new entity. And the Delete All Amendment steps back a little bit from that and suggests instead that a structure that, as I said, is a little bit less ambitious but would move us in that same direction. And the idea is to set this up within DEED and to require collaboration with a number of other state agencies rather than creating a new separate entity outside of all the existing state agencies. And that scope seems a little beyond what we're going to be able to do right at this time. So what it would do is, within DEED, set up a multi-agency project whose job it is to really promote market green economy projects, to support green enterprises and green businesses, to do specifically a market development and marketing strategy for those businesses, to one of the original ideas was to help designate green opportunity zones or areas around the state, and that's a concept that will take more discussion, but I think is a good one to move forward on, depending on legislation like mine and Senator Rosen's. We talked a lot about the idea of accelerated permitting so that a green business that comes forward with a great idea could have the opportunity to get more quickly through the bureaucratic maze that exists out there. And oftentimes, one of the barriers that we heard a lot about was, you know, if you are a renewable energy business or some kind of innovative green technology, you may have to go to the Pollution Control Agency, the Department of Natural Resources, DEED, and multiple other places to figure out what permits you need and to figure out what the rules of doing business are and to find out if there's any kind of assistance available for a startup business, for example. And commerce. I forgot to even mention commerce, which does a lot of these programs. And so we want to have a one-stop shop, and that's what this would be. One place to call, one phone number, one office where you could go and find out what Minnesota is doing in the area of the green economy and green business. And we had one of the ultimate goals would be that you could try to have, with someone from the PCA sitting at the table, you could have some help in getting through that permitting process in a simpler, faster, better way, given that you're promoting a green business that is unlikely to have significant environmental problems. It would make sense for us to try to move that forward as quickly as possible. So those are the kind of goals that we're talking about. This would set up a collaborative process with different employees from these different agencies. We have some funding in here that, and it's too bad Senator Tomasoni isn't here because I think he'll like the part about the funding because it comes from my division and goes to his to help start this process up. We've talked for years about how we need a better marketing strategy to capture the development of, for example, the renewable energy technologies, and that other states have really beat us to the punch in landing wind turbine manufacturers and other kinds of opportunities because we just haven't had the critical mass of marketing and focus in our state agencies, and we haven't had the funding to do that. And so this would start creating that office within DEED, but to put a collaborative aspect into it that goes above and beyond what our existing state agencies are able to do. So that's kind of a basic explanation. I hope that is... I'd be happy to take any questions.
Very good. Well, I appreciate that you have really worked on this to use existing resources, existing staff, because as we've heard repeatedly, bringing the right people together so there is real, like there's a real focus in bringing together all the stakeholders to deal with this issue is really an excellent idea. And again, because we've also had some discussions in this committee about other areas doing similar things and how might they all, instead of having, again, separate silos, working together because there's such crossover between the green technology and biotech and some of these other areas. So it's a really good start, Senator Anderson. Is there other questions, Senator Metzen?
Yeah, I just want to applaud Senator Anderson for her work in this area. I think it's one-stop shopping. I don't think you have to go to hopefully the 4, 5, 6 different agencies, cut through a lot of red tape, and get the results much much sooner. And that's kind of the kind of work that we're trying to do, at least in this committee. And I think do a little less with more with less. And this is an example of how we can do things, I think, in a faster, more efficient manner. So thank you.
Other questions, Senator Skoy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Anderson, I know Senator Metzen always reminds us in this committee that these agencies can do these jobs within their current resources. And I agree with you. But have you had any pushback from the Commissioner of DNR or Ag or Transportation about this shell assigning sufficient employees and kind of these would be employees that would be working in this area anyway, or how are we thinking about that?
Madam Chair, Senator Skoy, excellent question. And again,
Senator Anderson,
you know, the original bill, this is really stepping back from how we originally set it up, that we would just take these employees and transfer them out of their agencies, and that was a bigger stretch. So I think in this case, it's a little undefined how exactly it would work, and so I think we'd have to work out some kind of interagency agreement. We'd have to work with the budget chairs that oversee each of these agencies. But I would think that you could have, I know in DNR, for example, they have someone at the, I think, deputy commissioner level or assistant commissioner level who's focusing on renewable energy in DNR, and that would be a logical person who would be one of the collaborative employees. And I would think that you could do that within their existing job description and their existing funding. That would be my goal, because as Senator Metzen said, you know, this is about using existing resources, as Madam Chair also said. I mean, that's what we think we can accomplish this year, given our budget constraints. We're not trying to add any staffing. So I think it just is, it's a logical way to align the work that they're already doing. And I would think that in all of these agencies, there's probably, you could probably identify a logical person who could work on this. And so it might take a little within the departments, it might take a little work to make it happen, but I think it's doable without causing big disruption or budget implications.
Thank you.
Very good. Other questions, Senator Bonoff?
Madam Chair, Senator Anderson, thank you for bringing it forward. One of the things we've been talking about is that there's the potential for us as legislators to also act as ambassadors alongside of DEED to reach out to potential business enterprises that we may want to locate in Minnesota. So when you talked about, you know, we didn't get the wind turbine manufacturing that we might have liked to right out of the chute, and then I see on here that in your bill the commissioner will appoint somebody from the business community to represent the state at trade shows or missions. I'm wondering if you have considered that a legislator also could play a key role in representing the state on, you know, times where they, you know, are looking to attract new businesses.
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, thanks for asking about that. I was going to mention, you know, in the original vision of this, there's this, you know, chart that would envision, an executive being borrowed from some private industry to come and help run this, so that you really would keep the collaborative aspect going outside of government and working hand in hand with the businesses that are trying to expand and grow in our state in this area. So that's an important part the bill. I love the idea of legislators getting involved in this. I mean, people like me and you and many others have worked in areas for a long time and have plenty of expertise and enthusiasm to offer, and I've often wished I could go on those trade missions with the governor to work on renewable energy. And so I think we have a lot to offer as legislators to participate in that process. So I don't know if we should say that in the bill, but
Senator,
it's a great
idea. I don't know if you want to, you know, put it in statute or just certainly in spirit you could offer to the commissioner. But I think that we ought to look at that as a potential role for ourselves. I do love doing that, and I know you do too. And I think that we can be an asset to the efforts that are already ongoing trying to get people here. Thanks.
Okay, thank Senator you. Anderson. Well, I know this is going to state and local government operations, so that may be something that between now and then, if that's something that you want to work with Senator Bonoff on,
does it still
does
have
not
to
have
there?
To go there?
Because well, we did take
oh,
out.
Oh, we changed it so much, so it may not have to go there, okay?
Madam Chair, I would suggest perhaps finance.
Okay, it does go to finance, yes. We originally had it down for, but with the amendment, you are correct. So,
Chair?
Any other discussion, Senator Tomasoni?
Chair, Senator Anderson, since this is coming to my committee, is $100,000 enough?
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni, you missed.
Senator
did
Anderson.
You hear what I said
yes,
before?
Yes, I did.
I guess I'll... Yeah.
But I'm with
I'm with
Senator Bonoff. I think the chair of economic development should be on here, and maybe even of environment. And I think we should have some legislators on it.
Very good.
Madam Chair, I think that's a great idea, and maybe we should add that language now or add it in your division. I really support that idea.
Would you like to work on the amendment and work in Senator Tomasoni's committee, or do we have specific language now that you would like to add?
I think we can wait.
I think we will work. I think it's something, it'll be something to work on its way there. And since you have members on this committee there, they'll remind you. Right. Senator Rosen?
Only 5 days.
And
thank
Senator
you,
Carlson.
Madam Chair. And Senator Anderson, I appreciate you bringing this here, too, because I do think this is an important step. And we've definitely had various discussions about that in the Next Generation Energy Board meetings. My question, though, that I think the language lacks a little bit is how... And when I stepped in when Senator Metzen was talking about the one-stop shop, that's mm-hmm. perfect. how are you going to implement that one-stop shop? So that's where I think the language is a little weak. That is it going to be by a website? Is it going to be by literature? So it's just something to think about. That I know it says promote and market.
Well, Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, I think that's not entirely defined. You're absolutely right. I think with the appropriation, the idea would be you could have a person assigned to work on this, whether it's a full-time person or a half-time person who could be, I mean, you could set up one kind of front door where you would go. And that would be that person's part of their job, is to make sure that they, you know, they provide that doorway. So it would be a website, a hotline, a place where businesses would know this is the place to go to find out, the portal to all these other agencies. And then the other job that this person would have would be to do the collaborative work and to organize that. And then, you know, in terms of how we would get the different agencies to change the process within their own agencies, I think that would have to be worked out within the state agencies. But the goal would be that if you have these folks all meeting at the table and talking to each other regularly, that they could come up internally with ways to improve the process. And it might take more legislation to get there, but I think at least we could start the process of setting up a, you know, one place, the one-stop shop, and the collaboration, and then see what steps would have to follow from that.
So on that point, Senator Anderson, perhaps that if you look at line 117, shall report to the legislature, that may be something that would be important to note, that as you form this group, especially in this first year, of what ideas, what kind of needs come forward, what sort of other opportunities might there be there that might require the legislature's attention or further legislation. So, and I know that we do not note who that report goes to, but you have so many committees here, we were just talking of who that report would be to, might be something to think about also.
And Madam Chair,
forward.
To make Senator Betzold happy, we might want to change the date to January 15th rather than January 1st.
We'll take that. And Senator Carlson will move that amendment by January 15th. Discussion? And those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. And the motion prevails on line 117, changing January 1st to January 15th. All right, that was easy. Any other discussion? I think there's been Senator Carlson.
Madam Chair, that was exactly my discussion.
It's wonderful to have someone on the committee from state and local government operations, Senator Carlson, and you, I appreciate that. So any other discussion on the bill? It will be going to Senator Tomasoni's committee.
Finance. Madam Chair, I'll move.
Finance.
Excuse me, to finance.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Anderson?
Just point out that the Finance Committee has gotten in the habit of sending bills to multiple divisions, and so it'll probably need to travel. It'll certainly need to travel to my division, which has the appropriation after Senator Tomasoni's, and maybe some others as well.
Okay, very good. And no more discussion. So Senate File 1919 as amended, Senator Carlson moves. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. And the motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so
Madam
much.
Chair and committee members.
Now, I believe. And now, Senator Rumble, thank you for waiting so patiently. And thank you for coming back today with Senate File 247. I know you have done extensive work on this. And we welcome you here today to Business, Industry, and Jobs.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee members. First of all, thank you for allowing this bill to be heard today. I know that you went through an extensive hearing last year, and as our chairperson just mentioned, we have done an extraordinary amount of work on this bill since you last heard it. I will not bring you or drag you through every little bit of what we've done, but I would like to do a little bit of a review of what this bill is and does. And first of all, I think I would like to ask Senator Rosen if she wants to offer an amendment.
The Senator Rosen, do you have an amendment, and do you know what the number is?
Yes, Madam Chair. Mr. Fuller, do we have anything besides the A4 amendment?
I don't see.
We'd just like to delay it for a second. So, Senator Rimmel, would you like to?
Sure. While you're looking for that paperwork. First of all, I want to recall what this bill does. It's a very modest bill. It phases out BPA, which is bisphenol A, in baby bottles and sippy cups. And there are currently alternatives on the market. Infants and babies' bodies develop very quickly, and that development is controlled by genes that send messages in sequence. When those genes are disrupted in the early stage of development, it can cause tremendous amount of harm that sometimes does not show up until much later in their lives, such things as obesity, cancer, diabetes, and heart disease. As you recall, bisphenol A is a building block of bicarbonate plastic. It is a known hormone disruptor that acts a little bit like an estrogen. This can trigger malfunction in the genes, and these unwanted actions affect the neurological and reproductive development of children. In laboratory experiments associated with heart disease, with diabetes and obesity, bisphenol A has been connected with those experiments. Have you got the amendment yet? Okay. Since last year, we have made significant changes to the bill. For example, this bill only covers baby bottles and sippy cups, so it's removed anything to do with cans, with infant formula, and toys. So it's two products, baby bottles and sippy cups. And those are the two products that little children, especially newborns to 3 years of age, but really newborns to 2 years old, use the most. They chew on their sippy cups, and the liquids that are heated up in the baby bottles can cause bisphenol A to release itself from the plastic. And because the children are so small and developing so rapidly, even very, very tiny amounts of bisphenol A can affect the hormone and genetic sequence in their systems. So it's very, very narrow bill. Why am I bringing this bill before you? This past summer at the state fair, we had a questionnaire, and of the people who took that questionnaire, 78% said they would like to see toxic chemicals removed from children's toys. Already, many stores have started to eliminate baby bottles and sippy cups that have bisphenol A in it. There are 14 other states that are working on this legislation. During the course of the year, we've worked really hard to accommodate all sorts of industry, whether it's the medical device companies, the playground equipment companies, the beverage container companies, the toy manufacturers, and the infant formula container companies. We've worked with everybody, including the governor's office, on this bill. The bill as you see it, or the amended bill, as
so we do have the A3 amendment now, Senator Rimmel.
Do you want to move the A3 amendment, please?
There, Senator Rimmel, since this is not an author's amendment, so at this point we will pass out the A3 amendment, and from Senator Rosen. And Senator Rosen, would you like to discuss the amendment?
Yes. Well, Madam Chair, this basically keeps the language in line with what the House is. And one important part that I would like to make an oral amendment on is on line 1.9, deleting the words starting at including breast milk storage containers. I'd like to make amendment on the amendment.
So at this time, on line 1.9, it's on her amendment to strike the language on 1.9, including breast milk storage containers, and the comma before that. Is there discussion on the Rosen amendment? Okay, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 And opposed, same sign. And the motion prevails. Okay, Senator Rummel, thank you for giving us a little. We were just trying to get our paperwork, make sure we had the right amendment here. So please continue. Thank you.
I understand perfectly. And it's pretty good timing because I was just getting to the point where this language is in line with the language that came out of the House. It received bipartisan support in the House and in one of the committees. It had a unanimous yes vote. I have with me, before I go on to that, I'd like to remind folks that this year is a year when it's been very hard to have any positive legislation come out because of our budget issues. This is a bill that carries absolutely no fiscal note. It does send a message to parents that we have heard them. They want the comfort of being able to go into a store and know that if they buy a baby bottle, if they buy a sippy cup, and those are two items targeted to our very most vulnerable children, that they know that they will have one that does not contain this chemical. So it's good timing for a very specific bill. I have with me Lindsay Dahl from the Healthy Legacy Coalition, who was going to walk you through some key ideas.
Sure. And thank you, Ms. Dahl, for coming today.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. I'll kind of scooch up here so you can hear me. Thanks for having me here today. Like Senator Rummel mentioned, we've been working really hard in the House side to find some language that we can all live with. So it's been kind of a fun collaborative process, and I hope that we can, you know, address the same language here today in the Senate. So again, my name is Lindsay Dahl, and I work with Healthy Legacy. We're a Minnesota-based public health coalition, and we have over 30 member organizations that really span from different fields. So we have health-affected groups like the Learning Disabilities Association and ARC. We have the Parent Teacher Association, the Minnesota Public Health Association, a variety of organizations that have come together to really focus on protecting children's health. I'm going to run over just a few kind of minor things or important things, but just to kind of keep quick in interest of time. So leading manufacturers and retailers have really kind of been responding to consumer requests and have started to phase this chemical out and has started moving in the right direction. So that's really hopeful and that's a great sign. With that being said, a lot of the parents that we represent and work with in Healthy Legacy are concerned that there's really key places like 99-cent stores, for example, that haven't been making the right moves to phase this chemical out. And so what we really want to do in the intent of this legislation is to give parents a little bit more comfort when they go into any store, no matter what store that may be, they can know that the baby bottles and sippy cups are free from this hormone-disrupting chemical. The good news is that safer products exist, and they're already on the market. So, for example, you can get a 3-pack of baby bottles at Babies R Us for $2.99. So they're not any more expensive than the polycarbonate alternatives. And finally, I just want to reiterate what Senator Rummel mentioned, that we've been working closely. I've been corresponding with the governor's office. I actually did this morning as well. And since the language is the same as what's happened in the House, I hope that we can, on both sides and both houses, work in a bipartisan nature to make some great efforts to protect children's health. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you very much. And Senator Rummel, do you have other people here to
testify
today?
Yes, we do. I would like to bring Beth Fondell from ARC and Julie Earle from a parent to the table.
Well, I have a baby shower coming up, and I was on the website, and some of the products were baby bottles, and they were all noted as they were that they were free of the chemicals. So I just want to note that it is catching on in the marketplace, and that was something that was good to see. That, you know, it is something that, you know, that the stores are responding to, like, you know, consumer demand. So I noted that particularly since this bill was coming up.
And since you mentioned that, Madam Chair, one of the things that another change that I forgot to mention is that the bill allows for any retailer who has stock on their market to finish selling that stock before it takes effect. So nobody is going to get hung with old stock. Beth, you want to start?
Hi, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Beth Fondell from ARC Greater Twin Cities, and I'm here because ARC Greater Twin Cities were one of the members of the Healthy Legacy Coalition that Lindsay just spoke about. And for those of you who may not know, we're a statewide nonprofit organization with a 65-year history of support and advocacy for children and adults who have intellectual and other related developmental disabilities, and as well as a long-term commitment to prevention of these developmental disabilities. I am in particular affiliated with the ARC chapter serving the Seven County metro area, and in 2008, we provided support to over 350,000 citizens whose lives are somehow impacted by a developmental disability. It's estimated at this particular time that 17% of all children have a learning, developmental, and or behavioral condition at this point. And this number is annually rising, as depicted by the soaring costs associated with special education services and the increasing numbers of children that are eligible to receive them. And some of you serve on the education committees and hear about that quite often. There are multiple factors that can contribute to developmental conditions, and I assure you that those discussions happen in different venues across the country every single day as to what all of those factors are. But it is environmental exposures is one factor that we can affect and take action to limit, and this bill does exactly that. Our concern within the ARC, both at the statewide level as well as nationally, is the compelling accounts that are pointing to significant changes in a child's development after having been exposed to a certain chemical during the first 3 years of life, and that's exactly when the brain is still developing. So bisphenol A is one such chemical that we know safer alternatives are available, and we also know that it has shown up in the neurological systems of children. And so valuable state resources really could be reallocated if we as a state would opt to an aggressive stance toward preventing these lifelong developmental conditions. Those resources are not just in special education services, but all of the services that are needed to support a person who has a lifelong developmental disability as they begin to transition to life in the community. So I really would like to urge on behalf of ARC and its constituents that you support this Senate file, because it will help ensure that every child has a chance to grow up healthy and ultimately become a contributing member of society. And if we could, just as you referenced, Madam Chair, that there are many, many places and many, many industries already that have taken this to heart, what this particular bill addresses, and are committed to creating a healthy legacy. And I just hope we as a state can get on board with that as well. So
thank you very much. And Ms. Earle, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to provide testimony. My name is Julia Earle, and I'm here today in my capacity as a parent speaking in support of Senate File 247. I have two children now who are 9 and 6 years old. When I was pregnant with my children, I did all the things I could to ensure healthy outcomes for them. I stopped drinking coffee and alcohol, I took prenatal vitamins, and I stayed away from toxic fumes, insisting that my husband and father-in-law stain and varnish a dresser we had painstakingly assembled for our new baby. In spite of taking all of these action steps during pregnancy, I was completely baffled when it came to identifying and purchasing products for my children once they were born. I'm well educated, and my husband is a college professor. Still, between the two of us, we didn't know if baby products were safe for our children. Regardless of any parent's educational background, we should all be confident that our baby bottles and sippy cups are safe. Finding safe products for babies and children shouldn't be added to the already daunting and exhausting work of parenting and keeping our children safe. As parents, we do everything we can to keep our children safe, from covering electrical outlets to holding our toddlers' hands as we cross the street. Because the federal government currently lacks a system for requiring human health safety, please help my children and all Minnesota children by keeping them safe from exposure to BPA and supporting Senate File 247, the BPA-free baby products bill.
Thank you very much. You know, I do want to note that some of the issues a number of legislators have had with this or other pieces of legislation is that, you know, we're being asked to sort of vote on a chemical one by one, and very few of us have that background, and so we are listening to information. And I so I know that right now Senator Scheid has a bill. I have also introduced a bill that could we have a system of how we address this and involve the agencies and the professionals who can come together and advise us or develop. So I think that that has been one of the issues with this particular bill. It's that it's not that legislators are not responsive to it, but is there another way of us doing this? And what is the role of also our federal government? And that we've heard that there are also, with a new administration, there is an openness to have that discussion. We hope that that takes place. I know that there's a group coming together next week to deal with this on risk management. So again, that there's a process here so that some of us are feeling as if we have very competing issues, and listening to people who have good things to tell us on both sides of the issue, but trying to balance that. So I'm not sure if Senator Scheid, I know that your bill is moving through the legislature, and we will have it here, we believe, on Monday. To talk about that. And I do hope that we will find a way to do both, that we are able to address this bill, because I think you've done so much work, Senator Rumlin. I really appreciate that, as I think others have, but also that we really look at a process, you know, in the future, and being proactive than waiting for an advocacy group to, you know, identify the resources and the chemicals and which one should we address first. So I do appreciate your work, and I hope you've appreciated the work that others have done to try to look at this from another perspective. So,
and Madam Chair, I want to reiterate the – I do hope that is the direction we will go in. However, the evidence out there regarding this particular chemical is so compelling that to wait until we get those global agreements and processes in place, I think, would be unwise. We could lose 3 to 5 years of children who are at their most vulnerable stage. So that's why we were willing to bring the bill down to be very narrow and at least protect the most vulnerable right now as those discussions proceed, and I fully endorse those discussions.
Very good. And Senator Bonoff and Senator Latz.
Mr. Chair, Senator Madam Chair. Senator Rummel, could you just give us an update on what's happening with, is it the Grassley legislation? The legislation in the, do you know what's happening with the federal legislation that is similar to this?
I don't know a lot about it, Senator Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff. What I do know is that in the U.S. House, there is a bill, and I think it relates to the lining in cans and food products. It's not the same as this. That's about all I know. I think it was brought because I believe it's Sunoco, which is a major producer of BPA, has made the decision that they will not sell BPA to people who are going to use it to line cans.
Madam Senator Chair, I have mentioned this before to Senator Rummel, but I just think that we should do all we can to urge our federal government to act on these issues, because I think it is very costly to our business community to have to act on a state-by-state basis and to have, you know, products for sale in one state but can't be for another, and packaging requirements that are different in Minnesota than they are in Wisconsin. And I think it adds costs ultimately to the ultimate consumer as well as the business community. So I think this is important, and of course nobody wants poison on our baby bottles. And so I appreciate your work, but I think that that this approach to legislating these types of issues isn't the proper approach. Thank you.
Okay, Senator Latz, and then Senator Rosen.
Madam Chair, a comment and then a question. The comment is I would be remiss if I didn't take advantage of the opportunity to note that Julia Earle is not only a well-educated mom, but the quality of her education is supreme. She and I were classmates at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and active together in college activities, so I wanted to take the opportunity to welcome her personally to the committee as well.
Thank you.
I did have a question for Senator Rosen, and maybe I missed a comment here while I was inhaling my lunch off the table. You added an oral amendment to delete the breast milk storage containers.
Yes.
What was the purpose for
that
oral amendment?
Senator Rosen?
Senator Latz. As Senator Rummel said, there has been a tremendous amount of work that's been done on this bill, both in the House and the Senate. And to recognize and respect that amount of work, that oral amendment to strike, including breast milk storage containers, was the agreement made by all the parties. And so I intend, Madam Chair, to support this bill, but I would like to just make a cautionary note that I am a little concerned about the path that we are going and what we're starting with this. We start with the baby bottles, and we continue on with other products that are going to be banned and other chemicals that are going to be banned from it. And it just seems like we just keep rolling and we keep rolling and don't look at the unintended consequences that are behind that. So I just want to make that cautionary note that and being, you know, cynical, I'm probably expecting something next year that's going to be coming out that will ban something else with biphenyl. But I do intend and respect the amount of work that Senator Rummel and all the other parties did to work on this bill and get it to an agreement.
So comment from Senator Rummel. Oh, excuse me. Go ahead. Senator Latz, continue.
I might introduce that bill to include breast milk storage containers in the BPA ban, but that's it seems to me it's moving in the wrong direction. I'm going to respect the process and all the parties that came together. If that was the consensus of everyone that put this together, that they did not want to include breast milk storage containers in a BPA ban, I don't understand why that would be an issue. I certainly, if my wife were storing breast milk, I certainly would not want her plastic storage container to have BPA in it, which is going to go straight into my, my now 17-month-old. If that's the... If everyone else that otherwise would have opposed this bill said, okay, we'll exempt breast milk storage containers, and I'll go along with the deal just to make sure the bill passes. I think it's moving in the wrong direction. And
On that note, Senator Latz, I think that there is an agreement, and it's not just about passing the House and the Senate. It's also about having the governor sign the bill. And I understand there are people who are working with the governor's office on this bill, and we wouldn't want to send a bill that may get vetoed because we've added language that was not part of an agreement. I mean, that is what I've shared with people, that I think we should respect that. But
I'm sure I'm not identifying any specific parties mm-hmm. to this, and I intentionally did not do so. So I'm not trying to call anyone out on this. I'm just saying whatever the collective judgment was, okay. I think it's faulty judgment and unfortunate that it became a condition of putting this package together. But I do want to see this bill pass, and I'm going to respect that process.
Okay, so let's end Senator Rummel.
And I just, to Senator Rosen's comment, I believe that the conferences you referenced, Madam Chair, and other conferences that are going on, the kind of legislation that Senator Scheid is bringing forward, is going to start a movement toward avoiding the very thing that you're worried about, that there will be an industry-wide discussion about how we deal with the chemicals that are in our environment. So I'm very hopeful that we won't go chemical by chemical. I've seen a lot of information coming out that's leading me to think we're going to go in a more global process. But I think maybe all of us should be a little bit cynical.
It works.
All right. Any other discussion?
Madam Chair.
Senator Tomasoni.
Chair, I don't know if this is for Senator Rummel or for Council, but is Senator Rummel, I think I heard you say that anything that's on the shelf can be sold. Is that because of the January 1, 2011 date implies that everything will be sold out by then? And then is the 1.14, where it says this section does not apply to the sale of used children's products.
But I didn't see it.
Is that like for rummage sales? Is that what we're talking about, or what is that?
I'll ask Ms. Stahl to respond, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair, Senator Tomasoni. Yes, the language to extend the date for retailers was specifically put in there, and I worked with Representative Zellers in the House because retailers wanted an additional year to make sure that any stock they had in their storage, you know, would be sold, so they wouldn't have to eat up the cost of any of those products. And speaking with some retail owners in the house side, they were saying that that would give them enough notice to stop buying those products. So that's why there's the two different dates. And then the exactly for what you talked about, rummage sales and thrift stores and what have you, we wanted specific language in there to make sure that this only applied to new products. There's no way that it would be appropriate for Minnesota to be looking at used products or at all. So, yeah. Thank you.
Okay. Senator Lance and then Senator Bonoff.
Go ahead. Well, Madam Chair, Senator Rummel, do you have any sense of what the inventory dollars we're talking about are in the marketplace?
Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff, I haven't got a clue.
Madam Chair, Senator Rummel, I'm interested in finding that out because it could be that, you know, with a very small amount of dollars, we could perhaps offer something to the retailers. Now that we have said it's poison, we're doing this, it just seems off to say you can sell it for another year. I'd rather find another way to make the retailers whole, personally. But.
Well, perhaps, Senator Bob, to that point, when I was on this website looking all these baby products, all of them were BPA-free. I noticed that repeatedly many of them were. Now, that doesn't mean all of them are, but I think there's a consumer that if this bill passes, you know, consumer awareness, again, that is certainly a good point. If you want to go down and change that date today in this committee, there may be issues that, again, go back to sort of, you know, the work that's been done on this bill. But I think that certainly awareness that the bill's been passed is going to raise and that, you know, consumer demand is really, really changing the marketplace in terms of these products.
And, Madam Chair, Ms. Dahl can answer or address that at least in part.
Sure, Madam Chair, Senator Bonoff. I think that's a good point to be raised, and that's something we can look into. What I know is, like Senator Saltzman said, it's moving in that direction, and so retailers are kind of already heading in that direction. And basically there is, from the manufacturing to the retailer, there's a stream of products, as I'm sure you know, that you have to address. And so the idea is so that we don't have all these baby bottles that either – you know, have to be put in a landfill or disposed of otherwise or not be, you know, sold. So it gives them time, and that's what the retailers that we worked with on the House side were comfortable with. So,
Senator Latz.
Madam Chair, maybe this is the easiest way to address the problem, just delaying the effective date, but a more direct way to address the problem would simply to put in language that says if you've already got, you know, stock on the shelf or in your warehouse, you can use that up. You just can't buy any more to put on the shelf unless it's BPA-free. Why would that be a problem?
Is that a question? Senator Rummel?
Ms. Dahl?
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Latz, that's actually the original language we had in the House, but we felt in the spirit of compromise as we were working that this kind of got to the same idea but in a different way by giving them an extra year.
Okay, any other discussion? Are members ready to vote? Any other discussion? Well, I think that, Senator Michelle.
I appreciate the discussion. I just note, at least on our agenda, we've got a list of some others who, at least at the beginning of this hearing, are in opposition. I don't know if some of that has changed.
Thank you for that reminder, Senator Michelle. So we do have some people who are here who would like to testify in opposition of the bill. Mr. Fisk. And then Marty Mountford and John Rost, if you'd like to come to the table. And I apologize that I started to breeze over you. That was not my intent at all. We certainly want to hear from you today, and welcome. Thank you for being here.
Who wants to be first?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kevin Fisk. I'm with the Grocery Manufacturers Association. We represent the food, beverage, and consumer product industry here in the United States. We have a number of member companies who are located here. There's about 54 facilities in the state of Minnesota, and a number of them have their world headquarters located here, and you all know who they are. I'll make my comments very brief. We're very concerned about legislation that would ban the use of bisphenol A. Bisphenol A is used extensively throughout the food and beverage industry. It's used in packaging containers, and it's used very extensively. We have relied solely upon the approval of FDA, of the World Health Organization, European Food Safety Authority, the other agencies throughout the world who found that this is a safe chemical for us to use in our packaging, and we rely upon their continued approval. They continue to research the chemical and have found that it's a safe chemical for us to continue to use. We would not like to see any sort of ban on the use of bisphenol A since it has been deemed safe for our use throughout the industry. We don't have alternatives. There have been several that have been looked at. They require years of testing. One chemical is not an alternative for BPA. It might be for one application, but not for all applications. So we haven't found something that is an alternative, even though there are folks who say that we need to use other chemicals. We don't have them. If we were to look at a specific chemical, it could take 5 to 7 years of testing. Once it goes through product testing, then it has to go to approval by FDA, and that can take 1+ years for approval there. So we're convinced that bisphenol A has the approval of the food safety agencies throughout the world, that we should be able to continue to use it, and that a ban of this chemical suggests that it's not safe. And we'd certainly not like to see that sort of warning conveyed to consumers of our company's products. And with that, Mr. Steve Henches with American Chemistry Council is also here to speak as well.
There, Mr. Henches.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to discuss with you today bisphenol A. As Kevin mentioned, I'm Dr. Steve Henches. I'm with the American Chemistry Council, where I've been very deeply involved in the science on bisphenol A for the last 9 years. You've heard about bisphenol A. It's primarily used to make two things, polycarbonate plastic and epoxy resins. These are not new materials. They've been safely used now for more than 50 years. And indeed, they are used today in a very wide array of consumer products, ranging from shatterproof eyeglass lenses to sports safety equipment, things like bicycle and football helmets, to CDs and DVDs, to components of most every piece of electronic equipment you can think of, as well as certain food and beverage containers. Epoxy resins are very durable materials, and they are used very widely as protective coatings. In particular, they are almost universally used as the protective coating in most food and beverage cans, including infant formula, where the coating serves the purpose of protecting the safety and integrity of our food supply. Bisphenol A, over the 50 years, has become one of the best-tested substances that is in commerce. And what that means is that we have an extraordinarily rich scientific database to assess the safety of bisphenol A. Now, I'm not going to drag you through that today unless you insist. That would take probably about 9 years, I suppose. But I think what is important for you to know is that that science, that scientific database, has been comprehensively reviewed by many government bodies, by regulatory agencies around the world, in particular in the last couple of years. And the consensus amongst government bodies around the world, from the U.S. to Canada to Europe to Japan and other places, is that bisphenol A is not a risk to human health, in particular at the very low levels that are found in consumer products, and that includes products that are intended for infants and children. So just last year, for example, we have seen updated assessments from the European Food Safety Authority as well as the European Union. And indeed, in Europe, products containing or made from bisphenol A are accepted as safe for use, and they are very widely used. Just in the last few months, we have seen statements coming from individual countries in Europe supporting that position. For example, we have seen statements from the French Food Safety Authority, the German Federal Institute for Risk Assessment, the Danish Environmental Protection Agency, and most recently, just last month, from the Swiss health authorities. And in addition, we've seen similar statements coming from other countries around the world. Again, just in the last few weeks, we have seen statements from the governments of Australia and New Zealand giving their very similar opinion on the safety of bisphenol A. In the U.S., the relevant regulatory agency is the Food and Drug Administration. They are in the midst of a safety assessment right now, so strictly speaking, we don't know the conclusion of that yet. But we do know that as of August last year, when FDA released a draft safety assessment, the conclusions of that draft assessment were very similar to the conclusions from all of the other government bodies around the world. Considering the very rich scientific database available for bisphenol A, there are no alternatives that have been tested even remotely as well. And although you have heard about safer alternatives, that claim is not based on facts. There are no alternatives that can be demonstrated to be safer than bisphenol A simply because none have been tested anywhere remotely as thoroughly or have been vetted by as many government agencies around the world. And I also want to touch on the scope of the bill. It has been said that the bill is very narrow, that it focuses only on a couple of products. But I disagree with that. This bill is not really about baby bottles or cups or any other particular product for infants and children. This bill is really about the safety of bisphenol A. Either it is safe for use in products intended for children, or it's not, but it can't be both. And so it cannot be unsafe in products such as bottles and cups while at the same time being safe in other products. So I think it misses the point to say that this bill is very narrow and that it only covers certain products. This bill is really about the safety of bisphenol A. That's the decision that really is in front of you now with this bill. So a couple of things I want to say in closing. One is that I would encourage you to carefully consider the views of the government bodies around the world that have reviewed the science on bisphenol A, the ones that I mentioned just a few moments ago. And I also want to close with one thing that I think is inspirational in a sense. This is a memorandum that President Obama signed just several weeks ago on the subject of scientific integrity. And he starts off this memo by stating, "Science and the scientific process must inform and guide decisions of my administration on a wide range of issues, including improvement of public health, protection of the environment," and he goes on to list several other examples where science is of critical importance. And although this memorandum is really aimed at his departments and agencies, the ones that now report to him, I think those words are very important because they're instructive for all of us. We have to keep this in a scientific context. We have to make sure that the science is informing the decision that you are making. So even though this memorandum does not literally apply to you, I think the words are very important. So I will close with those comments, and I can answer or try to answer any questions you might have now or later.
And are there questions for the testifiers? Senator Murphy.
Madam Chair.
Senator Day.
Oh, I'm sorry. No.
Senator Murphy.
Go ahead.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, and is Dr. Henches?
Henches, yes.
Henches, okay. Well, you know, first you mentioned the FDA, and, you know, sometimes the FDA doesn't get things right, like Vioxx. So sometimes I wonder about, you know, some of the methods that they use. And I know that in the industry there's a standard for looking at products and certifying them. And if everybody's using the same means, I can see why Vioxx was used all around the world for the detriment of thousands of people. But my question is if this product is so safe, why are some of the producers of this product, like Sunoco, for example, not selling this product anymore for use in baby products?
Well, Sunoco, first of all, Sunoco is a relatively small producer of bisphenol A. They themselves do not actually make children's products. They make bisphenol A, but they're a relatively small producer. And that portion of their business that would go into children's products was very small, less than 1%. Mm-hmm. They made a business decision to not service that market any further. But what I can say absolutely is that their views on the safety of bisphenol A are very consistent with the views of the government bodies around the world that have reviewed the science. I'm quite certain of that. Sunoco is one of the companies that I work with every day. It's a business decision that they made, just like companies make business decisions every day.
And Senator Day.
Madam Chair, and I don't know who knows the answer to this, but how many other states have they done this in, where they banned?
Well, no states. There have been bills proposed, I think, over the last 5 years now we've seen bills, and there's probably 20 states. I think it's more than the number mentioned earlier that are considering bills. None have passed.
At this Madam time. Chair, Canada has banned baby bottles that have bisphenol A in it.
Okay, Senator, thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
First, Dr. Henches, I think he had a response, and then Senator Latz. Dr. Henches.
Just a brief response on Canada. I didn't specifically address that before. The Canadian government last year released their scientific assessment on bisphenol A, and I want to give you a quote, if that's okay. It's a very short one about their bottom line. What they said is that the current research tells us the general public need not be concerned. In general, most Canadians are exposed to very low levels of bisphenol A. Therefore, it does not pose a health risk. So while it is true that the Canadian government has proposed, they have not done this yet, but they have proposed, or they are considering, just as you are, they are considering a ban on polycarbonate baby bottles. They have not done that yet, and they have also made it very clear that they have no concerns with any other product, including sippy cups, tableware, bottles, anything like that. They've also made it very clear that their proposal to ban baby bottles is based on precaution, not based on the science. Their scientific assessment is very consistent with everyone else's around the world. They found no risks to human health.
Okay, Senator Latch had another question, I believe.
Yeah, Dr. Henches, who exactly is the American Chemistry Council?
We're an industry association, and we represent the business of chemistry in the U.S.
So companies like Dow Chemicals and other major corporations that engage in chemistry to produce their products, is that
correct?
So it's a trade group, essentially.
Industry association, yes, same thing.
Okay.
Very good.
My information was that in Canada, a ban on all BPA products took effect, I think it was in November, according to the Washington Post.
No, there have been many headlines that said that bisphenol A has been banned in Canada. They have focused only on polycarbonate baby bottles, not anything else, and that is a proposal right now. It has not been completed yet. There's a regulatory process that they'll have to go through to actually do that if they proceed. But again, they've made it very clear that they have no concerns with other, in particular, children's products, bottles, cups, tableware, sippy cups, whatever. They've made it very clear that they have no concerns with those.
Madam Chair, Dr. Henches, you might want to write a letter to the editor to the Washington Post to correct their research.
Yes. There have been many things that have been misreported, and we have not been able to keep up with them.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, one
Senator
thing, Madam Chair. My understanding is that the science advisory panel that advises the FDA has come to a different conclusion than the FDA politicals at the top under the previous presidential administration did in determining whether BPA should be considered safe or not, and that, in fact, the science advisory panel advised them to take another look at things.
First, FDA was not finished. What they did is they gave their draft report to their science board for what they called a peer review. So the science board didn't go back and evaluate all the science themselves. They evaluated the quality of the report, really, and they did have a number of critical comments. You're quite right about that. And so FDA is now in the process of addressing those comments and presumably improving the quality of their report. They're not done yet, so we don't know what it'll say. But we do know that as of about 1 month ago, FDA gave a status report back to the same science board. That was on, I think, February 24th. It made quite a bit of progress following up on those recommendations, and this was a public meeting. I was there observing, and my read on it is that the science board was very supportive of the direction that FDA is now going. But again, strictly speaking, we don't know the conclusion. It's not done yet. FDA has, it's a work in progress.
Madam Chair, just to follow up.
Yes.
Dr. Henches, my understanding was that the criticism that the science advisory panel had of the FDA draft report was that the FDA draft reporters had failed to evaluate a number of independent scientific studies in reaching the conclusions that they reached. And the science advisory panel was saying, go back and take a look at those independent studies, not just the ones that you did look at.
Okay. So perhaps we have three more questions because we do have, we do want to be able to move to do something with this bill today. So Senator Skoy, Scheid, and then Michelle.
Madam Chair, I just have a quick comment. I wish you and Senator Scheid luck in getting your alternative mechanism in order for determining these things, because this is a perfect example of we hear from one side and then the other side, and which side do you believe? I know Dr. Henches just said that there's no alternative to bisphenol A baby bottles that's as safe. Well, we all know that there's glass. I mean, so I hope you guys can work on this and come up with a different mechanism for determining this. And
we'll be doing that on Monday.
I'm a co-author on your bill, so I'm kind of cheering for you, Senator Saltzman, but I'm also working with Senator Scheid.
Very good. Senator Scheid,
yes,
and then
Madam
Senator
Chair,
and
just
Carlson.
Quickly, I just want to express a thought, and that is I don't think we should be thinking that BPA is okay. I don't think because even the comments by industry say it's been concluded that the potential exposure to BPA from food packaging applications is extremely low. In other words, if you were exposed to a higher level, it would not be good for you. So this is where I come down on this issue, is that if there's any risk at all, it would be to children who are using a baby bottle over and over and over again that's going through a dishwasher and it's breaking down. We know that about plastic containers. They tell us all the time they break down. Don't put them in the microwave, et cetera, because it breaks down. It's not good for you. This says itself, BPA, the implication to me is that it's not good for you, but you don't have to worry too much because you're not probably going to get exposed too much from a use. Well, the reverse of that is you would be exposed, and that wouldn't be good for you. So I hope that members will support Senator Rummel's bill, and then I hope they'll support my bill or some accommodation that we have among us on this committee about establishing a process. It's needed.
So Senator Michelle and then Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think I'm going to echo Senator Scoy a little bit, but it strikes me, and I appreciate Senator Rummel's work and with all the stakeholders here, I think what we have is a political agreement in front of us, but we certainly do not have anything like scientific agreement. And I just feel like this committee, we need to approach these issues with some humility. You know, we're state senators. We're not chemists. We're not scientists. You know, we don't have a lot of background to be able to sift through the information that we're getting. So I guess kind of all roads lead to this discussion that we might have early next week about putting together some kind of a mechanism where we can better address these kind of issues. But I appreciate the discussion around the table here. I think everyone's recognizing we're treading on some uncomfortable terrain here, Madam Chair.
Very good. Thank you. And Senator Carlson.
Yep, Madam Chair, and Dr. Hinges, I would think probably should know the answer. There are some baby bottle manufacturers that are phasing out, and plus water bottle manufacturers. For instance, I think Nalgene is completely BPA free. What are they using as their alternative?
Well, that is correct. Many, first of all, there have always been alternatives to polycarbonate baby bottles and some of these other products. They weren't necessarily a large part of the market. They are always out there. There are just more alternatives now than ever before. I think a number of different plastics are being used as alternatives. I'm not even sure exactly what all of them are, partly because some of them are very new materials. And one of the alternatives that is being used is a plastic that's very similar to this very common plastic that several of us are drinking out of. And just to highlight the point that these alternatives have not been tested as thoroughly, I thought it was very interesting that just a few weeks ago a study came out from German researchers reporting that this plastic is estrogenic and suggesting that this might cause health effects. I don't know if that's true or not or if we need to be concerned about that. That's not my point, only that the alternatives really have not been tested as thoroughly as polycarbonate plastic and bisphenol A. They're out there, but you cannot say that they're safer.
So we have some other people here
Chair,
to testify. And Senator Carlson?
More questions. But so what you said before was that there weren't any alternatives. You mean that there aren't any alternatives that you've tested and that meet the requirements that you're saying need to be met?
Yeah, let me clarify. I think that was a comment from Kevin Fisk.
Okay.
Think back to bisphenol I used for polycarbonate plastic and epoxy resins. For polycarbonate plastic, again, there have always been some alternatives out there. Other plastics have been used for baby bottles and these other products forever, as far as I know. It may not be safer, but they're there. On the epoxy resin side, that's the material that's used to coat as the protective coating on most food and beverage cans. That's a much more challenging question to find an alternative. One, to find one that works as well as epoxy resin, keeping in mind that the whole purpose of it is to protect the safety of food, and then to know that it's safer. So it's a much bigger challenge for those products.
And I guess probably the question is for Mr. Fisk then. And evidently, no, I think there are no baby formula products that are put into the coated containers. Isn't that correct? All baby formula is in glass?
No, that's not correct. There are metal containers. There are some in, I believe, plastic containers. But right now, those companies don't have alternatives that they can turn to. I know that that some of the companies that we represent, they do make baby formula. They have been looking for alternatives. So far, there isn't. There isn't anything for them to turn to at this point.
Mr. Chair.
Hey, we're going to – are there a couple other witnesses? Are you – sir, did you wish to – we have – we'd like to – we've got two more bills to handle this afternoon, and we've had a pretty, I think, good lengthy discussion so far, but – sir, why don't you – oh, ma'am, I didn't – yeah, welcome to Minnesota, and thank you.
Lovely weather.
Hi, I'll be very brief. I'm Dr. John Rost. I'm chair of the North American Metal Packaging Alliance. And in the information that I've supplied, you'll find a comprehensive list of all of the government agencies, the science-based agencies that have looked at the safety of BPA and have concluded that it's safe. What I really want to do, rather than go through a long testimony, is just take a second to talk about some issues that have been brought up. Basically, to the comments that Senator Scheid had, really, that's toxicological talk when you say that the risk is negligible or very, very low. You will not find any toxicologist or risk-based public health agency that will say anything further about the safety of it, basically saying that the risk for chemical is negligible or very, very low. That's basically the farthest you will ever get them to say, because nobody knows what's going to happen tomorrow. Nobody knows what the end will be.
That's
as far as they will go on the safety of that chemical.
Senator Rummel.
Mr. Chair, one of the reasons for narrowing the bill, there's no cans, there's no infant formula. There's the only thing in this bill is baby bottles and sippy cups. So the testimony that we're about to hear is irrelevant to the bill that we have before us. And that's one of the reasons we made the compromise.
That's a good point. Could
I just mention one thing? I think the reason why that the North American Metal Packaging Alliance is still here in opposition of this bill is basically what – to a comment that was said, that this bill is going to declare that the chemical BPA is poison. Well, it should be noted that basically a great amount – of the ag products that are developed in Minnesota, a lot of the foods are packed in that. So basically what this bill would do is declare a chemical poison but allow it for certain uses. And I think that's inconsistent with the science that is out there on this issue, and also I think inconsistent with what would be in the best interest of the food companies of the state.
Ma'am, did you wish to?
Yeah, very briefly, Chairman. I'm Marty Mountford with the International Formula Council, and as was stated earlier, I understand as of today that infant formulas in cans would no longer be part of this legislation. And the only reason I'm here is because for the last 2 years it has been, and I would simply like now to go on record in opposing the bill for the reasons that basically have been stated here, that we believe that there is not. The weight of the scientific evidence does not support concern about BPA. You've been told that the evidence is compelling that it's not safe. We respectfully disagree on that point. And I would like to commend the lady who was there a moment ago relative to the process that she was talking about that was needed, because this isn't going to be the first chemical, I think, that it isn't the first, and it won't be the last, so getting a good process in place, I think, would be very helpful. And then just one other point. We've heard a lot of comments made about the science, and I think that as Senator Michael, I believe, Michelle, I'm sorry, I can barely see that far.
Okay. I get it all the time.
Okay. Commented, I think that's where a lot of the confusion lies, that it's a complicated issue, and there are lots of variables involved. That when people say that there are studies that find an association, that doesn't mean that the study is a good one. It doesn't mean that there's harm, and that's why we really need to leave it to the experts to look at these issues. Thank you.
All right. Do we have a motion to be
Mr.
made?
Chairman.
Senator Murphy.
Mr. Chairman, you know, in quick response, you know, some of the baby bottle manufacturers, and it says right here in this report I'm looking at, including Gerber and Playtex products, said that they will stop using BPA. And also, Toys R Us and Walmart have removed products containing this chemical from their stores, and Canada banned BPA from all baby bottles last fall. Mr. Chairman, I would move that 247 be recommended to pass as amended.
Okay, any further discussion on the motion? If not, all those in favor, before the vote, Senator Day.
I was sitting here and I was listening to this. And I look at it and I'm thinking that there isn't a very good case for being the first state in the United States to ban something that the FDA and all the countries and all the people are saying is fine. I guess I'm sitting around the table, and I know how it works around here, because when you get a group of people, it gets a little emotional, and people have to, nobody wants to say no. That doesn't bother me too much, because my entire life for 18 years I've been around here, and I've been very pro-life. And I hate to bring that into it, but that's about babies, whether you like it or not. And I've been fighting on that issue, and we're talking about millions of kids. So, and then I sit and I listen, and I listen to the scientific people, I listen to the other people. So I think it's, as somebody said, this is just, again, something for Minnesota to be the leaders in getting something started that probably is going to harm a lot of our businesses late in the fall, we'll find out exactly what all this would entail and what businesses. So I bring that up because I'm going to vote no, and thought I might as well be one person around here that's not caught up in something that doesn't have any scientific proof at all that'll do absolutely anything for anybody.
Senator Rummel, and I think we're going to vote Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Our own MPCA committee members, on January 15th, 2008, submitted their report on endocrine-disrupting chemicals. And I'll quote, "As demonstrated by several of the studies cited in this report, endocrine disruptors can involve more than just sex hormones. In fact, they are many chemicals produced by endocrine systems of humans and wildlife, all of which have important roles in maintaining bodily processes. While there are still many unanswered questions, the evidence that the chemicals can adversely impact the endocrine function of humans, fish, and wildlife is mounting. The only thing this bill does is ask us to look at the most vulnerable people in our population. These are people newborn to age 3 who can be exposed to these endocrine disruptors. Nobody's calling these poisons. We're calling them endocrine disruptors that can disrupt the gene function in those little babies' bodies and have long-term effects, as were expressed by the testimony here. So I would ask you to support the bill because it is good for our children.
Okay. All those in favor of the Murphy motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Thank you, Senator Rummel.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble. Senate File 1368, unemployed and underemployed. Senator Dibble, welcome. Why don't we wait about 10 seconds here and let the folks... Did he leave?
Take your plastic bottle.
Our baby bubbles used to be glass, right?
That's what our kids always use. You heat it up in the water.
Wait until they get to beer. Wait until they get to beer.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Nothing's
in it for today.
$1,000 suits.
Hi, guys.
You're a medical marijuana guy now.
Don't take it personally, Senator Dibble.
This is a more fascinating bill. The thrill of minute, this bill.
We still have a quorum.
Doesn't matter. You just need more yeses than noes.
I do the delayed all? Yep. I probably need one.
It is different. Room. Okay.
Yeah, I know. bringing a snooze.
Can we process this thing in about? Yeah. Senator Dibble, we're going to get started. We'd like to pass your bill out before we have to get out of here at 5 to 3, if that's possible.
Oh, great. Thanks. That would be great, Mr. Chair. I'll start off. This is Senate File 1368. It has to do with tracking unemployment statistics. And I have the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair, author's amendment. It's a delete all.
That's your amendment. Okay.
I think it's been passed.
Senator Boniff will move your amendment. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, motion prevails. Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. As you know, the Department of Employment and Economic Development tracks our unemployment statistics, and folks are familiar with unemployment. The usual measure of unemployment keeps track of folks who have more recently been unemployed and are actively engaged in looking for work. You know, there's a definition put to that, have done something that's measurable to look for work within the last 4 weeks or so. But also, Mr. Chair and members, you're probably aware that what falls out of that statistic are folks who would be working if they could but are not actively seeking work or have otherwise accepted part-time employment and would be working full-time if they didn't have to. And so what we asked to do, starting in mostly in Section 2, is we asked that the Commissioner of Employment and Economic Development continue to report the normal unemployment numbers. The technical term for that is U3, but also take a look at what is referred to often as U6. Take this additional measure, add to that, so we have a real picture as a state, as policymakers, of what's really going on. Increasingly around the country, folks are paying more attention, particularly in this extraordinary circumstance that we're in now with the current economy. A lot of folks are are falling more and more into that category, folks who are accepting part-time work, folks who have become discouraged workers are not actively looking for work. So it would be informative and interesting to know that number as well. And so that's what this bill seeks to do. Mr. Chair, I have Steve Hine from Deed who knows a little bit about this. He collects these labor statistics.
Dr. Hine, welcome to the committee. And we don't want to rush you too much, but we've got about 5-6 minutes, if that's all right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Dr. Hine.
Yes, well, to expand on what Senator Dibble has commented on, we do collect the information in conjunction with the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They conduct a monthly survey called the Current Population Survey and provide us with the data that is then used by our office to compile these official unemployment statistics. There's a lot of other information there that is included in this data collection monthly, but which is not used in the calculation of anything other than that official unemployment rate. And this bill would require that we augment that information with comparable measures that would expand that definition of unemployed to include people that have discontinued searching or are working part-time but would prefer full-time work.
Your department has no problem doing this, and you're going to take on this. Of course, if we pass the bill, you have no choice, right?
That would be my answer, yes.
Yeah, did I answer for you?
Mr. Chair?
Yeah, Senator Boniff.
Thank you. Mr. Hine, isn't there also the case where if somebody's been unemployed for a certain amount of time, eventually they fall off your statistic as well?
Senator Bonoff, Mr. Chair, there is no direct correspondence between being on unemployment benefits and being considered to be unemployed. The information is gathered through a monthly household survey, which simply asks, well, I won't say simply, but asks, among many other things, did you work, and if not, did you actively look for work, and if not, did you discontinue your work search because you're discouraged, or and so on. It doesn't ask and doesn't depend on whether one's receiving unemployment benefits. So the answer to your question is no, they don't drop off. They may drop out of the sample, but they don't drop off at some point of time just because of time.
And Mr. Chair, Mr. Hines, so the numbers that we get about the percent of people who are unemployed are actually an accurate, with the exception of what's in this bill, they are an accurate measure and do not have any kind of a drop-off in those numbers.
Senator Bonoff, that is true. It is a sampling and modeling-based exercise, so there may be inaccuracies associated with that, but the inaccuracies are not because some people drop out of the measurement after some arbitrary amount of time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Dibble.
But just to be clear, people do drop off the measure for other reasons.
Yeah.
They drop off if they've stopped looking for work, and they become disconnected or marginally attached to the labor force. And that's what we're getting at in this bill.
Good.
So unemployment, the official unemployment measure doesn't actually report all the people who are unemployed who would otherwise be employed if they could be. So that's what we're trying to get at.
Okay, anybody? I don't see the downside
just to
of doing this.
Sure, just to emphasize and be clear, we're not seeking this number to replace the official unemployment figure. This would be in addition to, just because it's important for us to know what's going on out there.
May I add one other observation?
Sure, you may.
I mean, certainly we're in a situation in which we're very conscious of the high rates of unemployment that we're experiencing. We will come out of this recession, and we will eventually move into a situation in which our rate of population and labor force growth is going to be very small. I think I've presented to this committee recently on that likelihood or inevitability. And at that time, it will be important that we be able to identify underutilized labor resources, like those people that would prefer to work more hours or have other impediments to employment.
Well, we got to get out of it soon. Our 401ks or 101ks. But anybody in the audience opposed to this? Okay, Senator Scoia, would you
Mr. Chair,
like to make a motion?
I'll move Senate File 1368. I don't know where it goes, if it goes to the floor.
It goes right to the floor. You know what I appreciate? Every time we do something around this building, we have to add $100,000 or $200,000 for appropriation to do something. And I always think, well, there's 890 employees in this department, or 740, 720. And sometimes, can you do something like this internally without asking for someone?
I wish, Mr. Chair. I had a couple of fiscal notes show up last minute here in the last couple of days with $100,000 and stuff attached to them. So I agree with you.
I mean, I know people are working pretty hard in the state of Minnesota, but if you can't find a few people to do. But anyway, that's my conservative attitude this afternoon. But anyway, I think it goes right to the floor. On the SCOI motion, all those in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion prevails.
Mr. Chair, member.
I think we're adjourned until Monday.
Oh, what happened to Rice?
I think we have a full
full
schedule Monday. So, okay. The committee is adjourned.